1500 UTC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, April 6, 2023. South Sudan population has reached 12 million. That's according to the country's National Bureau of Statistics.
The figures that we have come up with are based on the satellite imagery and enumeration that was done after that.
And the Ministry of Justice in South Sudan says enforcing the rule of law is a challenge. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's National Bureau of Statistics released a report of population estimates from a survey carried out in 2021. The Bureau says the country's population is more than 12 million. Isaiah Cholroy, chairperson of the Bureau, says the population estimated data could be used by policymakers and other groups for service delivery in the country. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai has more from Juba.
Isaiah Chol-Arwai, the head of the National Bureau of Statistics, say his team was unable to complete the report on time due to several challenges, including flooding and local insecurity, which disrupted the enumeration exercise in some areas.
The figures that we have come up with are based on the satellite imagery and the enumeration that was done after that in terms of the methodology. So in our view, as the Bureau of National Bureau of Statistics, we believe that these figures can only be used for policy formulation, for planning, and for service delivery. They may not necessarily be used for elections, simply because the figures that eliminate or emanate from the survey may not necessarily be suitable for conducting the population and housing census. Ideally, the population census, if elections is to be done, it is critical that the census is carried out.
South Sudan's Minister of Finance and Planning, Dier Taungor, says the data from the survey will help the government of South Sudan and its partners plan for other crucial future surveys in the country.
You all know that an efficient national system for the generation and dissemination of population data and demographic intelligence, including in a humanitarian setting, is critical for evidence-based planning and decision-making. In this regard, we once again acknowledge the support of the UN and of the United Nations Fund for Population Activities, work for providing technical assistance to the National Bureau of Statistics in its capacity building, as was done during the PES process.
Ademola Olajide is the country's representative for the United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, in South Sudan. He says the report is a micro-census which provides data for planning and the policy formulation meant to foster development of the country.
Indeed, we all have a key role in our cooperation framework with the government of South Sudan in strengthening the use of evidence for development planning, and that is very critical in strengthening the capacity of the Bureau of Statistics. They remain a critical, very important implementing partner for us, and so we have a plan within our country program, as do other UN agencies, to continue to support that agency to build its capacity to take this data forward, not only this data, but development planning.
The acting UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan applauded the National Bureau of Statistics for completing what he called an important task that will remain critical for providing service to the people. Peter van den Aured says humanitarian agencies will use the data for planning services delivery across the country.
For the United Nations globally, population data is something very important. Again, not just to collect data as a purpose or an objective by itself, but as a foundation for achieving the sustainable development goals.
The head of the National Bureau of Statistics says his office is compiling a detailed report with analysis of demographic and socioeconomic characteristics. He says the report will be shared for demographic dividends modeling. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
South Sudan's main opposition group, the SPLM-IO, is welcoming a decision by President Salva Kiir to reinstate Amir Ateny Aliere, the Speaker of Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, who was fired 3 months ago. SPLM-IO's Information Director applauds President Kiir's decision to reinstate Amir. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has details from Bor.
SPLM's IO's Information Director, Pok Both Baluang, says South Sudan First Vice President Riek Machar met with President Salva Kiir Wednesday and discussed what he called overall violations of the 2018 peace agreement. Baluang says President Salva Kiir's decision to reinstate the Speaker of the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly is a good gesture.
In total, they have discussed 16 points. Among them was Right Honorable Amir Aliere, the Speaker of Jonglei State Assembly. We welcome the decision of President Salva Kiir to reinstate Right Honorable Amir Aliere, and we appreciate that he has done the right thing since the remove of the Speaker was unilaterally by the President.
Jonglei State Speaker Amir Ateny Aliere says her removal from the Assembly by the State Governor was a mistake.
I was defending the rights of all people, especially the rights of the people of Jonglei State. I don't have anything personal with my governor. Now my right has manifested, so I thank my party leaders. When I return to my office, I hope we will cooperate and continue with the implementation of the peace agreement, whether SPLM, SPLM-IO, or SOSA. All the people who demand their rights must be given.
Baluang says he expects President Kiir to continue working with the other signatories of the peace deal to prevent the country from sliding back to violence.
We're hoping that the president will continue and to commit himself to the implementation of the access in that time period and to reinstate the Minister of Defense, the Honorable Engineer Tay, with revoking the decision or the Republican order to swap the Minister of Defense and Veteran Affairs with the Ministry of Interior.
President Kiir's party and several opposition groups signed the revitalized peace agreement in 2018, ending years of conflict that killed hundreds of thousands of people. In August 2022, the signatories of the peace agreement came with a roadmap for the extension of the transitional period until 2025. Under the roadmap, the parties are scheduled to conduct elections by December 2024. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Sudan, where the country has a rich archaeological history, boasting more pyramids than Egypt. At the University of Khartoum, women archaeologists are set to dominate the field, with more than 90% of archaeology students now female. Henry Wilkins reports from Khartoum.
While Egypt might be the first place that springs to mind when it comes to pyramids, follow the Nile River further south to Sudan and you'll discover Meroe. They're arguably Sudan's most important archaeological treasure, and now female archaeologists are set to take the reins of studying them. Lina Hatem Ahmed is an archaeology student at the University of Khartoum. She says that in Africa and in Sudan, people are not aware of the importance of archaeology. Studying it is fun. She adds that students are enthusiastic about it and it makes up a part of a rounded education. Archaeology subfields too help us develop a view of the world, she says. Yahya Fadil Daha leads the university's archaeology department, where 27 of 30 students are women. Women, he notes, often score higher in entrance exams.
The majority of students are female. Historically, women are they participating in the life of Sudanese. They were the rulers during the Merovingian period. So we have a long history that women are their freedom and they are participating in the society.
According to the UN, Sudanese women suffer multiple forms of discrimination and inequality. Some female students say they have had to overcome preconceived notions of gender roles to get into archaeology. Marwa Ahmed Sadiq is another student in the archaeology department. She says she meets some people who don't support her studies and tell her that it's against Sudan's traditions and religious beliefs. She says some people ask her, how can you exhume bodies? But the most objections come from a misunderstanding of what archaeology is for. But she says her family has always been supportive of her work. Fatma Abdurrahman says her family does not support her going on field trips outside of Khartoum and forbids her taking longer trips, which are often needed. She says her family doesn't have a problem with her working near Khartoum, but they definitely say no if she has to be away from home for a month, for example. She adds that working outside of the city is difficult because it takes up the whole day and often there is no cell phone network to communicate with her family. Nonetheless, she hopes to continue her studies and become an archaeological tour guide so she can play a part in introducing Sudan's rich history to more people. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
Still in Sudan, the streets of Sudan's capital were deserted today as the civilian opposition prepared for protests to mark an anniversary in the fight against the military rather. The French news agency says authorities declared Thursday a non-working day and imposed large military presence on the streets. Troops also blocked off the Nile bridges leading to the suburbs of Khartoum. April 6 is a symbolic day marking the anniversary of uprising that ousted two leaders who had taken power by force in 1985 and in 2019. Sudan's current leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, seized power in a coup in October 2021. Today, the opposition and the military were scheduled to sign a deal to restore a transition to democracy, but the signing was delayed amid tensions between the military over the timetable for reintegrating the powerful paramilitary rapid support forces into regular army. The RSF merged in 2013 from Janjaweed militia that was used against non-Arabic minorities in western region of Darfur. The militia has been accused of war crimes. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Kenyans sit down to resolve their political deadlock. Find out more after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What do you do on the weekends?
Over the weekend, I happen to read my books, the novels, and sometimes I go for my leisure time, play pool tables, and watch football because I'm a fan of Arsenal.
Weekends, most of the time I listen to music, I go to the beach, I hang out with my friends. Sometimes I go to the clubs, but mostly, most of my time, I'm always with my mom.
It is very good. Weekend is something where you can enjoy your life with either your boyfriends, girlfriends, your friends and colleagues sometime. So it can be in form of swimming, playing footballs and watching football. I'm a great fan of football.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The situation in Kenya is calm after 2 weeks of opposition anti-government protests. While both sides have decided to give dialogue a chance, President William Ruto has yet to say how his administration will fight the high cost of living, one issue that sparked the demonstrations. From Nairobi, VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has this report.
4 days after President William Ruto and opposition leader Raila Odinga agreed to a temporary truce, some Kenyans have expressed a huge sigh of relief. The protests were paralyzing streets in Nairobi and other major cities and starting to hurt the country's already fragile economy. However, opposition leader Odinga had suggested the protest could resume if the government fails to show meaningful engagement in discussing key issues, such as reforms to address alleged election irregularities. The central issue for many Kenyans is the high cost of living. Silas Omenda, founder of Divergent, a research and data analysis firm for small businesses, says President Ruto needs to give attention to inflation.
The president had to sort out the political angle to the protest, which was to stop the protest from happening, which had already had started to cannibalize the economy. The next conversation is that it becomes now a conversation around economy in terms of what needs to be done to alleviate the current economic crisis.
Amanda says the cost of food and other basic commodities has skyrocketed.
So if you look at 2021, maize, a packet of 2 kgs was going to around 117 Kenyan shillings. If you look at 2022, it went up by around 126, right? Mm-hmm. So that's actually an upwards of around 8% increase, yeah? And maize is a staple food in this country.
The Kenyan Bureau of Statistics says the annual inflation rate as measured by the Consumer Price Index was 9.2% in February, a slight increase from January. On the streets of Nairobi, people interviewed by VOA say they want calm while the parties attempt to boost the economy. Frederick Juma said the president deserves support for now.
I want to urge our opposition leader, Prime Minister Raila Amolo Odinga, to have the interest of Kenyan at heart and to do dialogue and to come up with a solution that will fit all Kenyans.
Mohamed Hassan Galgalo voiced support for Odinga but wants to see talks between the government and opposition.
Let the people of Kenya give him time. And then 6 months, you cannot do something with 6 months. You want him to, the people of Kenya, to give him like 1 year. If 1 year is not going to do anything, now you are going to start judging.
Vincent Kimosop, a policy and governance expert in Nairobi, told VOA it's true the cost of living is high, but it's important to recognize there are several issues.
Number one, top line issues at the moment politically is the reconstitution of the electoral management body. And I can tell you at this point, for observers like us, I've just come from a meeting, it will be very critical to ensure that the issues that affect the public continues to be part of the conversation, which are raising high cost of living, the issues of youth unemployment. Number three, the issues of consolidating national unity and cohesion. And you know, these issues were identified way back, even in the mediation process that Kofi Annan chaired in 2000. 2007.
Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan led a group of mediators following a bitterly disputed presidential election between Odinga and former President Mwai Kibaki that resulted in Odinga serving a term in the now abolished post of Prime Minister. Meanwhile, the opposition's deadline for meaningful engagement is set to expire Sunday. Odinga has not said if the protests would resume the following day. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to Zimbabwe, where some of the Zimbabwean officials accused of gold smuggling and money laundering in the Al Jazeera documentary Gold Mafia have welcomed a government plan to investigate the allegations. But critics doubt the government's ability to crack down on internal corruption. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
In March, Al Jazeera released its investigative documentary, Gold Mafia, which linked illegal gold trade and corruption to powerful individuals in Zimbabwe. Simon Radland is a businessman who owns a tobacco company. In the documentary, he was accused of lending the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe millions of dollars to buy gold to be smuggled out of the country. He dismissed the Al Jazeera film, describing it as sensationalized in the extreme and making broad claims without any context or evidentiary proof. However, he told VOA he welcomed government investigations into the documentary's claims. But this financial officer at a government school who chose to be unidentified because of fears for his safety says he has provided evidence of corruption to authorities over the past 3 years and is doubtful anything will happen to the gold mafia.
I don't foresee them acting on this issue for corruption. Yeah, it was given the number of times, apart from the submission of the physical documents. I've even had instances of actually making calls to follow up, and at times they sound like they've forgotten about who this person is calling over which issue.
The Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission turned down requests for interviews about the accusations in the Gold Mafia documentary. But following the film's release, Zimbabwe Information Minister Monica Mchangwa said the government was taking measures.
Government takes this opportunity to reaffirm its commitment to upholding local and international laws, including laws relating to financial transactions, the trade of gold, and the other precious minerals.
Matendai Biti, an opposition leader and former Zimbabwe finance minister, does not think so.
The Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission has spent millions, about $33 million in the last year alone, on corruption, but there's been no prosecution, there has been no investigation. So we have no confidence in that anything can happen, but at least we welcome the normative a commitment to dealing with the corruption.
The Zimbabwean government has long been accused of ignoring corruption associated with senior officials from the ruling ZANU-PF party. Critics say that explains why the country's economy is in doldrums. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Mozambique has legalized the creation of local militia under the military to help fight Islamist militants in the northern Cabo Delgado province. Charles Mwangwiro reports from Maputo, Mozambique.
The decree legalizing the involvement of local militias in the fight against Islamist militants in the northern province of Cabo Delgado was approved and announced Wednesday after a cabinet meeting in Maputo late that day. The government had secured parliamentary approval for the move in November after the defense ministry admitted the Mozambican army could not deal with militias alone. The self-defense local militias already helped the Mozambican armed forces and military contingents from Rwanda and some Southern African Development Community countries in the fight in oil-rich Cabo Delgado. Cabinet spokesman Filima Oswazi says the local militia force will be formalized to strengthen the role of the defense and security forces in countering and containing the spread of militant Islamist incursions, protecting community settlements and public and private infrastructures. He added that the decree will allow for better structuring, organization and logistical support for local self-defense militias. Swazi says the decree establishes the local force and the respective statute. He says the decree defines the concept of the local force, its activation and deactivation, composition, forms of acquisition and its rights and duties. The force is mostly composed of ex-combatants and civilians who, since 2020, have supported the fight in Cabo Delgado. In 5 years, the conflict in Cabo Delgado has already displaced more than 1 million people, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and caused close to 5,000 deaths, according to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, which specializes in disaggregated conflict data collection, analysis, and crisis mapping. Mozambique has been fighting militants linked to the Islamic State group in Cabo Delgado since 2017. Charles Mangwiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
That report from Mozambique brings us to the end for this show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a group from Eastern Equatorial State and the song Dodo. We have been listening to a Lokoya traditional song from Eastern Equatorial State. Just in case you don't know, the Lokoya come from Eastern Equatorial State. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voafrica.com/South Sudan. We wish you a good evening and remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Madarana.